Chapter 27. How to Let a Wild Thing Out of a Cage, and What Happens When You Do. The gun Max had given him all those years ago barked, and sparks blinked off the cage frame.
"Holy throne," said Vorier. "I thought you were aiming at Eisenhorn."
"I was," said Drusha. He smiled at Vorier. "Not really, I was aiming for the cage."
"Oh, well, good shot."
"Vorier, it was 10 centimeters away." Drusha bent down. "I think it worked," he said. He pulled at the cage door, and it swung open, groaning on its hinges. Drusha started to speak, but things began to change rapidly. The light radiating out of Eisenhorn began to diminish. There was a screeching, squealing din as the mechanism of the loom began to slow down, gears faltering, cogs decelerating. The churring row of the swarm grew louder. There were insects and smoke everywhere. Eisenhorn went limp and fell sideways. His mouth stopped moving. The violet glare in his eyes went out. Blood dribbled from the corner of his lips.
"Get him out!" Drusha yelled.
"You'll have to help me," said Vorier.
Between them, they scrabbled and dragged the big, heavy body clear of the cage.
"Is he dead?"
asked Drusha.
"I don't know," replied Vorier.
"I might as well have shot him," said Drusha.
He heard someone calling out his name. Nail and Max were hurrying across the gantry towards them, waving insects out of their faces.
"What happened?" Nail asked, crouching beside Vorier.
"Difficult to sum up," said Vorier. "The Magos had an idea, so..."
"What did you do now?"
asked Max, turning to Drusha.
"I'd like to think something good," said Drusha, "but who knows?"
She looked at him.
"You all right?"
she asked.
"Yeah," he said. "You? Fine?"
"I've missed you," he said.
"It's been 10 minutes," she said.
"No," he said. "I meant..." She hugged him tight.
"You silly bastard," she whispered.
"He's breathing," said Vorier.
"Well, she clamped on quite tight there," said Drusha. "But I'm fine."
"Eisenhorn is breathing," said Nail.
They knelt down around him.
"Need to do something about these cuffs," said Nail.
"No idea where the key is," said Max.
Eisenhorn opened his eyes. They were pale and looked very old.
"You shouldn't have stopped me,"
said Eisenhorn quietly. He was staring up at Drusha.
"Well, I think I should," said Drusha.
"I was close," said Eisenhorn. "The king was going to fall."
"He'll fall one day," said Drusha. "Sometimes it's important to do a small thing."
Eisenhorn sat up slowly.
"Why did you say that?"
he asked.
"No reason."
"Someone said..."
Eisenhorn began.
"Someone said something like that to me. I think I was dreaming. My mind is whirling."
They helped him to his feet.
"Magos Drusha,"
said Eisenhorn.
"You may face the censure of the Ordos for your actions today."
"Yep," said Drusha. "And so will you. And I know which set of charges I'd rather be accused of."
The smoke was getting thicker. Their clothes were heavy with the weight of crawling insects. From far below, they could hear the groan of tortured metal.
"I vote we leave," said Nail, "as fast as we can."
They headed for the steps, left the gantry, and walked towards the hatch. Max and Drusha helped Vorier between them. Nail gave his arm to support the limping Eisenhorn. The hatch was open. They went through into the long, tall hallway of the Shade Hall. It was cooler there, but smoke was flowing out of the tower and gathering in thick black folds up in the high ceiling. Insects covered every surface, churring and ticking. They swarmed in the air.
"Did you open the door?"
asked Vorier.
"I think so," said Eisenhorn. "I don't know."
"I feel a breeze," said Max.
A figure stood in the hallway ahead of them. It was Draven Sark. He had bathed and shaved off his beard and filthy hair. He wore the long white robes of a Magos of Materia Medica.
"You should have finished your work," he said.
Nail raised his las pistol.
"Come with us, or stand aside, Sark," said Eisenhorn.
"Goron made such a mistake," said Sark, gliding forwards. "He thought you were usable, transmutable. What a fool. You cannot make a heretic out of someone who is already a heretic."
"Stand aside."
Sark winced slightly.
"That will of yours," he said.
"Indomitable, unbroken, even by the torment.
You were already where the torment wanted to take you. It just made you stronger."
He smiled.
It made you stronger, and yet you still did not have the strength and purpose to finish your work. You could have defeated us, and you failed. Human weakness got in the way.
Not my weakness, said Eisenhorn.
Sark shrugged.
Human weakness. It is why your side will lose, and the Rot God King will fall. It is why we will prevail.
Nail fired. The Lasbolt hit Sark and left nothing but a tiny scorch mark on his white gown. Sark's eyes lit with a violet glare. A wall of force slammed down the hallway. Nail, Max, Drusha, and Vorier were hurled off their feet and went tumbling as if cast by a hurricane wind. Swarming insects billowed everywhere. Eisenhorn remained standing.
I will unmake you now, said Sark. Punishment for your abuse of the loom and for your obstruction of our work.
There was another gust of force. Eisenhorn groaned and sank to one knee. The Magos advanced upon him.
We have both known the torment, Gregor Eisenhorn, he said. It has changed us both. It has made me stronger. I carry it with me.
You carry something, said Eisenhorn,
struggling to remain upright.
I will cast you to the wind, said the Magos, and I will save the loom. The great work will continue.
Go to hell, grunted Eisenhorn.
Sark blasted him again. Insects billowed up, moving as one, and covered Eisenhorn from head to foot, writhing and ticking. Eisenhorn bent his head and raised his cuffed fists in front of him, like a man at penance.
Fall,
said the Magos, and unleashed his power again. Eisenhorn slid back along the marble floor.
The king seeks to tame us, said Sark. Chain us! Harness us with incantation! What little he knows! How small he thinks! Freed from his bounds, loosed in your world, we will do such wonders!
Drusha hauled Max to her feet, trying to shield them both from the surging wind and boiling clouds of insects. Nail dragged Vorier upright. They all staggered backwards as the Magos blasted again with invisible power. Eisenhorn looked up at Sark. Even moving his head took great effort. He raised his cuffed hands in front of his face. He was quaking, like a great oak in a gale, about to splinter. He spoke an unword. The force of it struck Sark full in the face. It also struck the cuff chain binding Eisenhorn's wrists and exploded it, driving metal fragments into the Magos like buckshot. Sark staggered backwards, blood streaming from a dozen wounds in his face. They bled like stigmata, dripping onto the white cloth of his gown. His left eye was gone. He screamed at Eisenhorn in rage. The unword knocked Eisenhorn backwards. His hands now free, he clutched at the hallway wall to stay upright. He answered with an unword that struck the Magos like a sledgehammer. The insect swarm became frenzied. Their mass clung to the high white walls, scoring marks in the stone. In long, threading lines, they were inscribing the words of enuncia that Eisenhorn and Sark were hurling at each other. Drusha realized where the odd script lining the walls of the tower had come from. The ancient, churring cackle of pre-human times, recorded syllable by syllable in the fabric of the world, marks in stone left by things before man, the swarming plagues of truth and destruction, the litany of the torment. Face to face, enveloped in a whirlwind of light and hammering air, Eisenhorn and Sark yelled unwords at each other, trying to unmake each other's flesh and souls. Eisenhorn's eyes shone violet, as bright as Sark's remaining pupil. With fury, Eisenhorn screamed and drove Sark backwards.
Go! Go! He yelled to the others. Get out! He's not human!
And you are?
Asked Drusha, shielding his eyes.
Get out!
They tried to struggle past the two figures, but the wind was too strong, the concussion of the unwords too great. Eisenhorn focused and began to drive the unwords out of him with his mind instead of his mouth. He drove them with the will that impressed Magos Sark so much. Sark was hurled back against the wall. It cracked behind him. Churring insects etched words around his form. Pinned, he writhed, screaming. Black dust began to puff out of his skin as it desiccated and shriveled. The howls coming from his wide-stretched mouth shattered the windows overhead. Glass rained down. The black dust continued to spray out of him. He was becoming a skeletal thing, wrapped in the white cloth of his robes. He slid slowly down the wall.
Move! Cried Eisenhorn.
You broke him, yelled Vorier.
No, said Eisenhorn, not even slightly.
Locust forms fluttered around them. A door stood open at the end of the hallway. It had not been there before. Daylight shone through it.
"Quickly," said Eisenhorn. "Quickly! Don't look back!"
And they were outside. The Carinine Glade. Early evening. The old and mossy rocks of Kestra Forest lay around them in the undergrowth. It was a still evening, but a sharp wind was blowing across the glade, swaying the old trees that faced them. Drusha looked back. A sliver of darkness stood behind them, a vertical slit in space like the shadow of a half-open door. The wind was spilling out of it, carrying smoke and clouds of locusts. The sliver was just standing there without a frame or any reference to the forest, a wound to another world.
"Thorn wishes Talon. Aegis, uplifting. A door without walls. Patton, hawk."
"What was that?" asked Max, holding her head.
"Keep moving," said Eisenhorn. "We have to get as far away as possible."
"From what?" asked Drusha.
"Sark's not dead, is he?" asked Vorier. "The human part is," said Eisenhorn. They were stumbling through the trees, locusts buzzing around them. "The shell is gone, but not the thing that took up residence inside Magos Draven Sark during those long years he spent inside the cage."
"What kind of thing?" asked Drusha, wishing he hadn't.
"Something of the warp," said Vorier. "Let's use the word demon," said Eisenhorn.
"Oh, let's not," exclaimed Drusha.
"Can you close the door?" yelled Nail, trying to help Vorier to keep up. "Shut it in there." "Not anymore," said Eisenhorn.
They ran down the slope, through the ancient woodland. There was a stream ahead. All the birds had fallen silent, as if knowing it was time to be elsewhere. A wind howled down the high valley from the slit in the world. Trees hushed and swayed. From the Kestra site 200 meters behind them, they heard the air popping and tearing, squeaking and splitting, as something wrenched it open like a Medicaid surgeon, levering apart a chest with rib spreaders. They splashed across the stream to the far bank. Behind them, they heard trees collapsing, torn up from the roots. Vorier could barely stay with them. Nail and Drusha grabbed him to carry him. Drusha heard another sound, a different howling. It was high-pitched, and the roar of it shook his insides. A shadow passed over them. This was Eisenhorn's demon, surely. He didn't want to look. He did anyway, in time to see a massive orbital gunship pass overhead. It was moving so low it slammed through the upper branches of the tree canopy, showering down twigs and leaves. Its burners flared as it slowed and turned. The ground shook.
"We need a clearing," yelled Nail. "Medea can't bring that in here."
200 meters that way," shouted Drusha.
"Really?"
asked Nail. "Well, maybe 300, replied Drusha. "I remember Fargal's maps." They turned the way he had pointed and began to wade through the underbrush. Locusts still purred past their faces.
"Keep going,"
cried Eisenhorn. "This is insane," yelled Max.
"Medea is telling me, keep going," Eisenhorn replied.
Overhead, impossibly huge and low, the gun cutter swung around hard, attitude jets flaming. Nose down and lifting slightly, it moved back up the slope towards the Kestra site. Something was erupting up through the trees, pushing them down and splintering them back. Stone by stone, the walls of Kestra Fortress were rebuilding themselves, rising up, pale and loam-caked, out of the old earth. And something was climbing out of the fortress mound. Something tall and slender, 4 times the height of any tree in the Carinines, rose up from behind the ragged curtain of stone. Then, a second. A third. Drusha stared in amazement. He knew what they were. He'd seen them before. Seen them in a microscope field, magnified 1,000 times so he could examine the joints, the chitinous cuticle structure, the black strands of hair follicles that sensed movement and vibration. Spider legs. Some arachnid form, anyway.
A Xenos variety of Chelicerata.
But these limbs were not under a microscope. They were 200 meters long. "That's not local," he said.
"It's not an arachnid either," said Eisenhorn.
"A demon, is it?"
"A plague demon," said Eisenhorn.
The joints flexed, the legs stepping up over the fortress wall, gaining grip to raise the body behind them. Imagination was no longer Valentin Drusha's worst enemy. Imagination was woefully inadequate compared to this. The world rattled. The gun cutter had taken station and opened fire, hosing the fortress site with ordnance from its gun pods, chin turret, and underwing racks. Fire bloomed in huge hemispheres, ripping up soil, splintered wood, and fractured stone. 5 hectares of woodland laid waste. The gun cutter swayed slightly and unleashed again. Rapid-rate lasfire ripped from its chin mount.
"Throne of Earth! That'll flatten the whole world!"
cried Drusha.
"No," said Eisenhorn. "Medea's just trying to keep it at bay, to hold it back and buy us time."
"To do what?"
"Reach the clearing."
Drusha looked back, still running. The huge dark mass was rising up out of the smoke and raging flames that enveloped it. It lashed out with its long clawed limbs. The tendrils whipped out from the half-seen body mass, too. They were organic and boneless, tentacles or pustular cords, or maybe ragged loops of intestine. Drusha could smell the stench of rot and fecal waste. One of the huge limbs struck the gun cutter a glancing blow. It veered hard to the right, jets howling to compensate. The engines shrieked.
"She's too low," Nail yelled.
The gun cutter was ploughing sideways, ripping through treetops and pulverizing trunks. It was beginning to shake and rotate, unable to pull clear. There was no room to gain lift and energy.
"Oh, throne," Vorier wailed. "Medea."
There was a long, terrible crashing noise of trees uprooting. The gun cutter vanished behind the tree line. The thing from the warp pulled itself clear of Kestra's walls on its vast legs.